Hey everyone, Zara here. Welcome back to Zara's Tech. Season 1, Episode 4. And let me tell you, today the gloves are coming off in the studio. We have a massive show for you today. We are combining some of the biggest topics of the summer because, well, everything is interconnected. We are talking about the massive showcase at WordCamp Europe in Krakow. We are talking about the cultural shift, why America treats tech like a rock concert while Europe treats it like a tax audit. And we are looking at a radical movement called the Small Web Sanctuary. Sitting across from me is Markus, looking, well, highly skeptical today. Markus, did you even bring your good mood today, or just your server logs?
Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
Hello, everyone. I brought my coffee, Sarah. That is much more important than a good mood when we look at the current state of the web. And yes, I am skeptical. I am very skeptical today.
Okay.
Because I looked at the code bases coming out of these big conferences. I looked at the reality of what developers are actually facing on the ground.
Let's hear.
It is easy to stand on a stage in Krakow and promise a beautiful future. But someone has to maintain the machine, Sarah. Someone has to pay the power bills for all this overhead.
Oh, come on, Markus. Don't be the typical German Duma dev right in the first 2 minutes. WordCamp Europe in Krakow was absolutely amazing.
So you enjoyed.
The energy was electric. Thousands of creators, developers, agency owners. They presented a roadmap for the next generation of the web. It felt like a tech festival. People were excited. They are pushing boundaries, making the web more interactive, more dynamic. Why can't you just celebrate a successful European flagship event for once?
Because a festival is great until the music stops and you have to clean up the trash, Sarah. Let's talk about the actual reality of these announcements. They talk about visual site building, deep AI integrations directly into the core, full site editing that requires massive JavaScript frameworks running in the background. On stage, they show this with a high-end MacBook Pro and a gigabit fiber connection. It looks smooth, it looks fast, but out there, in the real world, small businesses are running their sites on standard shared hosting environments. And these new frameworks are bloated.
No!
They are heavy. They are creating a massive performance tax for normal users.
It is not bloat, Markus. It is progress. If we do not make these platforms easier for normal people, they will all leave and go to closed ecosystems like Squarespace or Wix. The web needs to evolve. We cannot build websites like it is 2012 anymore. Normal users want visual control. They do not want to write CSS or look at PHP files.
What?
The core team is trying to democratize publishing. That is the mission.
You're kidding.
If that takes more processing power, then hosting companies just need to adapt and build better infrastructure.
Oh, just adapt. I love that phrase. That is a typical front-end answer, Sarah. Let's look at backward compatibility. That is the silent killer of the European web ecosystem right now. We have millions of legacy business websites running on older setups. Every time a major core update drops with all these heavy visual features, things break. Layout shift, databases stall, plugins clash. The modern web architecture is becoming a house of cards. Agencies are spending half their working hours just running maintenance and fixing broken updates instead of building new creative stuff. That is not progress. That is a technical debt crisis.
Okay, I see the point about maintenance. Yes, it is tough for agencies. But this brings us exactly to the deeper cultural issue we always run into. Why is there this constant friction in Europe? When a new tech tank drops in Silicon Valley, people in the US say, "Wow, this is sexy. Let's play with it. Let's build a multi-billion dollar company by next Friday." When the same trend arrives here, the European response is immediately, "Wait, where is the risk assessment? Is this compliant with the latest directive? Let's write a 300-page manual on why we shouldn't use it." We have a complete lack of technology sexiness over here.
Sexy tech.
Everything is viewed through the lens of fear and regulation. Don't you think this mentality is completely killing our competitive edge?
No, Sarah. It is not fear.
Oh, yeah?
It is sanity.
Is it?
You call it sexiness. I call it hyper-capitalist hype cycles. The US tech model is built on one principle. Move fast, break things, and monetize the chaos before the regulators catch up. Look at the AI explosion. They scraped the entire intellectual property of the human race without asking anyone, put a glossy interface on it, and called it a revolution. Europe's caution is not a bug, it is a feature. Our regulations, like the GDPR or the Digital Markets Act, are trying to protect the baseline of human society. We protect privacy, we protect fair competition, we protect data ownership. Why should we apologize for wanting a stable, ethical society instead of a lawless corporate playground?
Because a protected, ethical society that goes completely bankrupt because it has no industry left is not stable, Markus. It's dead. Look at the numbers. Where are the European hyperscalers? Where is the European Google, the European OpenAI, the European Meta? We do not have them. Why? Because every time a brilliant founder starts something in Europe, they get suffocated by red tape before they can even launch a public beta. We are regulating industries that do not even exist on our continent yet. We are becoming a museum. A beautiful, highly regulated museum where we look at American tools and talk about how dangerous they are while we pay subscriptions to California. It drives me absolutely crazy.
What do you mean?
Look at the latest corporate drama. We just had the Apple WWDC. They announced Apple Intelligence, a brand new Siri, a deep contextual AI, and then the absolute slap in the face for us. Apple officially confirmed they are withholding all these features from the European market. They blame the EU regulations. They blame the Digital Markets Act. So while American users get a smartphone, we in Europe are stuck with the old, dumb Siri. This is exactly what I mean, Markus. Our regulatory obsession is turning us into second-class digital citizens.
Honestly, Sarah, I couldn't care less. I really don't care. Let Apple keep their intelligence across the ocean. Why are you panicking?
Why am I panicking? Because we are getting left behind. Our hardware is losing its core value overnight.
No, it isn't. Think about it realistically. If I want a powerful LLM on my iPhone to help me write an email or analyze text, what do? I just open the Gemini app, or I open Claude, or Meta AI. The apps work perfectly fine on European iPhones. We don't need Apple to build the model into the operating system core just to use AI. The App Store is full of alternatives. Do you really think, after all this drama with Siri, Siri is bad, Apple software like Pages, Keynote is bad, with some AI sauce over it, I don't expect it to become better? No way. But there is a much bigger point here, Sarah, a privacy point.
Oh, here it comes. The privacy shield again.
Look at what Apple Intelligence actually wants to do. It wants to crawl your entire digital life. It wants to read your private notes. It wants to analyze your calendar entries. It wants to look at all your personal photos and scan your emails to create context. Are you really sure you want a US megacorporation to have full, systemic access to your deepest personal data on that level, just so Siri can automatically tell you when your flight lands? To me, the EU blocking this is not a punishment. It is a lucky escape. I prefer my phone local and quiet.
Huh. Okay. That is an interesting perspective. You are saying the systemic integration is a security nightmare, and the standalone apps like Claude or Gemini give us more control because we decide when to feed them data.
Exactly. We keep the gate closed until we choose to open it. At least I have photos on the phone that are a bit like NSFW. Not really safe for work.
So do I.
That is sovereignty in practice, Sarah. Not crying because a California company is throwing a tantrum over antitrust laws.
Okay. Let's leave our private camera rolls out of this. But look, even if you are happy that Siri stays dumb in Europe for privacy reasons, it still lands us right back in the same trap. Apple is throwing a tantrum because our regulations are tough. But we don't have a European Apple to replace them. We don't have the massive ecosystem here. We are just a market of consumers for foreign tools because our own founders are suffocating.
That is a fair point, Sarah. The lack of venture capital and the heavy bureaucracy for small startups is a real problem. I am not defending bad paperwork. But copying the American model blindly is a trap. If we just try to build our own version of their corporate silos, we lose anyway. The solution for Europe is not to become less regulated, but to become structurally different. We need to build on open, decentralized standards where monopoly formation is technically impossible. That is where our strength lies, not in building another closed Facebook, but in building open protocols where European companies can cooperate on a level playing field. It is about architectural independence, not just political complaining.
Okay, fine. Architectural independence sounds great in a white paper. But let's look at how that translates into real life. It brings us straight to the topic you wanted to talk about today. You told me about this concept of a small web sanctuary. And honestly, when I read your notes, I did not know whether to laugh or to cry. It sounds like digital medievalism. Tell our listeners what this sanctuary is supposed to be, because to me, it sounds like hiding in a hole.
It is not a hole, Sarah. It is a garden. Let's look at what the mainstream internet has become in 2026. It is completely unlivable. It is an industrial wasteland. You have giant AI bots crawling every corner, scraping text to feed LLMs. You have algorithmic feeds optimized purely for rage and addiction. You have SEO-optimized content farms producing millions of useless articles just to capture clicks for ad networks. The human element is gone. The small web sanctuary movement is a conscious decision by creators, webmasters, and small businesses to step away from this madness. It means building small, independent websites that are explicitly not designed for the masses. No tracking scripts, no cookie banners because there are no cookies, no algorithmic optimization, just clean, handcrafted HTML and text. It is a return to the web as a place for genuine human connection, away from the corporate surveillance machine.
See? This is exactly what I mean. This is total romantic hippie nonsense, Markus.
What?
It is digital escapism. You want to build a little secret garden with five of your nerd friends and talk about handcrafted HTML while the real world moves on. Let's talk about a normal small business. A local bakery, a mid-sized engineering firm, a regional insurance broker. They cannot live in a sanctuary. They need customers. They need visibility. They need to rank on search engines or whatever AI overview replaces search engines tomorrow. If they do not play the modern web game, they starve. You are advising people to become invisible in the name of philosophical purity. That is commercial suicide.
You are completely misunderstanding the strategy, Sarah. It is not about becoming invisible. It is about changing who sees you. Let's look at the numbers. If a small local business tries to compete in the mainstream web right now, they are losing thousands of euros every month on Google Ads or Facebook campaigns. Why? Because they are competing against massive corporations with infinite budgets. They are screaming into a hurricane. The conversion rates are dropping because the traffic is low quality and full of bots. A small web strategy means you stop screaming. You build a highly focused, deeply trusted digital home. You do not need a million random views from a click farm. You need 500 loyal local customers who love your work and subscribe to your direct newsletter or follow your domain handle. It is about depth instead of width. It is about sustainable business instead of algorithmic slavery.
I still think you are overestimating the patience of the market. People are lazy, Markus.
Okay.
They want convenience. They want everything in one app. They are not going to search for individual, independent websites like it's 1996. But look, before we get completely stuck in this philosophical mud wrestling, let's take a break. Because even if we disagree on the big picture, we both know that you still need the right tools to build a stable home on the web, no matter if it's a sanctuary or a massive commercial site. And that brings us to our sponsor. Let's talk about building websites with AI. If you check social media right now, everyone is talking about platforms like Lovable. And yes, they look amazing. You write a simple text and boom, you get a full application. But what happens if you want to change something on your finished site later? Usually, with tools like Lovable, you have to use a chat. You tell the AI, change this button or move that text. The AI then rewrites the code. But here's the problem. Sometimes the code breaks. You get a small error and suddenly your whole layout is a mess. It is like a house of cards. When one piece moves, everything falls down. In the end, you get frustrated. You throw the old code away and vibe the whole page again from scratch with a new prompt. That is just exhausting. I found a much better way for this. It is called Site.pro. The team comes from Lithuania. Site.pro is a great low-cost alternative to Wix.com, for example. You can start for free with a few limits, but using a paid version makes the most sense. It is very cheap. Here is why it is completely different from Lovable. Site.pro combines AI prompting with a stable visual editor. You work with real content, layouts, and shapes. You can create a website from scratch with a prompt, yes. But if you want to change a single element later, you do not have to rebuild everything. You just change exactly that piece, like a form or a box. The rest of your layout stays completely stable. No breaking code, no surprises. They even have e-commerce functions for online shops. No expensive subscription traps like the big tech giants. Check it out at Site.pro. It is a smart tool for your daily workflow.
Now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back. And Markus, before the break, you were preaching about your digital garden, your small web sanctuary. You said Europe needs to build on open, independent architectures.
Yes.
Fine. But let's bring this down to earth. How do you actually do that today? If I want to run a modern business, I need AI tools. I need LLMs for coding, for copy editing, for data analysis. Right now, that means I have to send my data to OpenAI, Microsoft, or Google. There is no European alternative that matches their power. So your independence is completely impossible in reality, isn't it? We are trapped in their cloud silos anyway.
Ah, I was waiting for this trap, Sarah. The landscape has shifted dramatically in the last few months. You do not need to send a single byte of your data over the ocean to use world-class AI. You can build your own local digital fortress right on your desk, and it does not cost you a fortune. It is powered by open source technology that anyone can install in 10 minutes. I am talking about a local KI stack.
A local KI stack? On your own desk? What does that even mean, Markus? Are you telling our listeners to buy a 10,000 euro server with liquid cooling just to generate some marketing copy? That is completely unrealistic for a normal office.
No, not at all. You don't need a server room. You just need a standard computer, a modern Mac Mini with an M-series chip, or a decent consumer PC with an Nvidia graphics card is more than enough. The magic word here is Olama. Olama is a brilliant open source tool. It acts like a local server for AI models on your machine. You download it, you run it in the background, and it manages the models for you. And we are not talking about weak, useless toy models here. We are talking about massive, high-performance open weights like Meta's Llama 3, Mistral from France, or Microsoft's Phi series. These models are incredibly sharp. For daily coding tasks, content creation, or data sorting, they are practically on par with the commercial cloud APIs.
Okay. Olama runs the models in the background, but I know our listeners. They do not want to look at a black command line terminal and type code just to talk to an AI. They want an interface. They want something that looks and feels like ChatGPT. Smooth, clean, with a sidebar for chat history. How do you solve the interface problem locally?
You solve it with beautiful native open source clients. My absolute favorite right now is an application called Jan.ai. Jan is a clean desktop client that integrates seamlessly with Olama. It looks beautiful, it has a gorgeous user interface, completely local chat logs, and it allows you to switch between different models with one click. It even lets you index your local documents folder, so you can drop your private business PDFs, your financial spreadsheets, or your client documentation into it. The local model reads it, and you can chat with your data. And the best part? Zero data leaves your machine. It works completely offline. If you pull your internet cable out of the wall, it still runs at full speed.
Wow, okay, that actually sounds powerful. Local document indexing without a cloud connection is a massive argument for legal departments and medical offices. But what about mobility? We live in a mobile-first world. I work from my phone, from my tablet, while I'm traveling. If my AI stack is locked on my desktop computer at home, I lose all that flexibility. Do I have to go back to OpenAI when I'm on the road?
No, you don't. The ecosystem has a solution for that too. There is a brilliant mobile client called Enchanted. Enchanted is an open source iOS and macOS app designed specifically to connect to your private Ollama instance. You can set up a secure connection, for example, via a private VPN or a tool like Tailscale back to your computer at home. When you are sitting in a train or a hotel room anywhere in the world, you open Enchanted on your iPhone, you type a prompt, and your desktop machine at home does the heavy lifting and sends the answer back to your screen. It is your own private, encrypted AI cloud. No subscription fees, no privacy policy changes, full sovereignty.
This is fascinating, Marcus. Let's think about the economic implications of this for a second. If an agency or a small business has 10 employees and everyone has a $20 monthly ChatGPT subscription, that is $200 every single month, forever, plus the risk of commercial data leaks. With your local stack, the software is completely free, open source, and the data is locked down. That is a massive financial and structural argument.
It is a total game changer, Sarah. It changes the power dynamic completely. We are moving away from dependency. If OpenAI changes their pricing model tomorrow, or if they decide to block certain European access routes because of regulatory disputes, a local stack user does not care. Their tools keep working. This is exactly what I mean when I talk about structural independence. We don't need to wait for European politicians to build a giant competitor. We just need to use the open source tools that are already sitting on our desks. It shifts the responsibility back to the individual webmaster and business owner. You can choose to be a passive consumer of American cloud monopolies, or you can choose to be a sovereign operator of your own digital infrastructure.
Wow, look at you, Marcus. You turned your Duma dev mood into a full revolutionary manifesto. I love it. And honestly, this local AI stack is probably the most practical answer to the European tech dilemma we have discussed so far. It bridges the gap. It gives us the sexiness of cutting-edge technology without sacrificing our data values. It shows that the small web mindset isn't just about simple HTML. It can be highly sophisticated.
Exactly, Sarah. It is about using advanced technology to protect human scale, not to destroy it. Open source gives us the keys to the castle again. We just have to be brave enough to turn the lock.
And that is the perfect closing thought for today's marathon session. We went from the big stages of WordCamp Europe in Krakow to the philosophical battlegrounds of the small web sanctuary and right down to the local hardware on your desk. What a ride! If you are listening out there on your daily commute or on the highway right now, thank you for sticking with us for the full distance. We hope this gave you plenty of food for thought for your drive. You can find all the technical terms, the links to Ollama, Yan.ai, Enchanted, and our sponsor Site.pro in our show notes on Substack. Don't forget to check out Elena Rossini's critical review on W Social there as well. Marcus, thank you for the intense sparring match today. It was tough, but we needed it.
It was an absolute pleasure, Sarah. Thank you. And to everyone out there on the road, drive safely, stay independent, stay performant, and keep building your own fortresses. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. See you next week for episode 5.
Welcome to the screen where the sparks will fly. Sarah's got the gadgets that'll make you sigh. Circuits hum and buzz like a neon glow. Step into the magic of Sarah's tech show. She's got drones that dance in the sky so high. Smartphones that blink like a firefly. AI whispers secrets only she can know. Let's plug into the world of Sarah's tech show. Buttons clicking, wires ticking, here we go. The future's in her hands, watch the current flow. Lasers beaming, screens are streaming all aglow. Get lost in the wonder of Sarah's tech show. Spinning out dreams in plastic. Her keyboard skills are nothing short of magic. Virtual reality, she makes it real. With Sarah on the mic, you'll feel the thrill. Binary beats sync with the heart of the crowd. Digital symphonies played loud and proud. The tech world's a stage where her genius will grow. Come ride the wave of Sarah's tech show. Buttons click.